Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with AAK. Now, what does meaningful progress towards sustainability in the food industry actually look like? When we move beyond the buzzwords and our laudable statements of intent, what does sustainability look like on the ground? In this episode, we're looking at targeted initiatives that are creating impact at scale while also addressing some of the sector's most complex challenges, from empowering women in West Africa to tackling the tough questions around palm oil. We've got a lot to get through, so I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Alina Platter, who's Sustainability Marketing Manager for Europe at AAK. Hello, Alina.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And Laura Schliebis, who's AAK's Global Sustainability Manager. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Fabulous. Great to have you on. Okay, look, let's get into this then. So, Alina, maybe a good place to start is with a very brief introduction to AAK. So can you tell us a bit about your history and what the company does today?
Yes. So AAK is about 150 years old, and we specialize in plant-based oils and fats, the value-adding ingredients in many everyday products. We are a multi-oil house, so that means we have different oils that we work with, from palm oil, rapeseed oil, sunflower oil, shea oil, and soy oil are a few of our key ones. And with our plant-based oils, we aim to make products better tasting, more nutritious, and more sustainable. And at the heart of AAK's offer is customer co-development, and that's about combining our desire to understand what making better happen means for each customer, and with our deep knowledge of products and industries such as bakery, chocolate and confectionery, infant formulas, savory, personal care, and plant-based foods, we co-develop better products for people and planet.
Brilliant. I imagine it's the sort of company where we're using products all the time that you've come into contact with in some way.
Yes, exactly. We are kind of hidden, I think, a little bit in the supply chain, but there are many products in the supermarkets, in the shops that contain our ingredients.
Okay, well, look, we're talking about sustainability today, and, you know, obviously it is an issue for the food industry is taking very seriously. I wonder where consumers are at with it, though. How much of an issue is it for consumers?
So both consumers and customers, we have different levels of maturity on sustainability. So when we look at consumers, we see that Europe as a region is leading on customer and consumer expectations globally. So, of course, it's different in each region how high the focus is. There are consumers across different segments that care about sustainability. And for some of our customers, as well as consumers and producers, sustainability and price are often a trade-off. So therefore, it also makes sense that everyone is on their own journey and on their own maturity level. And for us as AAK, as we have different customers on different levels of maturity, targeting different consumers, it's really important that we understand how sustainability is perceived by the different companies, how sustainability is embedded in the brand and business. And this is not the same for all. And when we gain an understanding of our customers' needs, it's also important that we understand how they use it. So for some, sustainability is a true differentiator. And for others, it's about complying with what's required. For us at AAK, we say we are a co-development company. So co-development on sustainability is understanding where the customer is on their journey, what needs they have, and to make them feel supported and understood with what they need, and to also show them that we are ready to take the next step with them with what they need.
It's interesting when you're talking about, because I know you've got customers there, which are your customers and consumers, which are people in the shops, I suppose.
Yes.
And looking at that in a bit more of a rounded way, I think, than I've probably heard elsewhere, where you're saying, look, not everyone's at the same place with this. And actually, we need to think about it in that way. You know, there might be subgroups within that who are at a certain place, but it's not just saying everybody is 100% concerned about sustainability.
No, exactly. I think that's where we have the legislations which are developing. There are a lot of factors influencing the sustainability landscape for companies that are publicly listed. It might be the investors. For companies that are directly the consumer companies, it might be the consumers. And then, like I said, the government. So all those factors are influencing how companies are dealing with sustainability. And the fourth pillar might be the part where it's about their own strategy, like how embedded is it? How much do we use this differentiator? And understanding that is really key to our business.
Okay, let's get into some of the detail then. And maybe we can talk about Shea. So what is it used for and why is it seen as a more sustainable alternative to other commodities?
Shea is a really favorite supply chain, I think, within AAK. AAK has a long history sourcing shea from a region in West Africa, and that's called the Shea Belt. And that is also already what is quite special about it, because it's not a crop that is grown in big plantations or on normal agricultural fields as we're used to, but it's a relatively undomesticated tree that grows in parkland areas. And this whole Shea Belt has been spread by bats that are eating the fruits, flying off and dropping, and that's the way it has traditionally been spread. That's a really interesting starting point, because we are utilizing something that is there available. The challenge that is there is to collect it and to bring it into a global supply chain. And that is really where women come into play. I think kind of this combination of a wild growing crop and a setup that is driven by women makes it so special. And you also asked, what is it used for? I think most people know shea as an ingredient in, for example, body lotion. And yes, it's a very much liked ingredient in personal care products. But actually, that's just approximately 10% of where shea is being used. 90% or the rest of it is often going into chocolate products as a cocoa butter replacer or substitute, because it is a little bit cheaper, but it can also be much more functional, depending on what you want to do with it. So maybe people don't even know that they're regularly eating shea and not just using it as body lotion.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting, isn't it? And we know that at the moment there's issues, aren't there, with some of the ingredients that go into chocolate, or how we make chocolate in terms of pricing and accessibility and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So having the option to maybe relieve some of the price pressure by using shea is really good. But shea is generally not a cheap ingredient. I think that's also something to be said, because it's not endlessly available. It comes from this region in West Africa. Everything is hand-picked. So it's still a premium ingredient, but versus shea butter, it can be a good alternative.
Can you tell me a bit about Kolo Nafaso? So this is a program that's been running since 2009, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's AAK's direct sourcing supply chain. It's a program that the company has built around women groups and sourcing directly from women groups, starting in Burkina Faso and now running as well in Ghana and in Ivory Coast. And most of it is focusing on Ghana these days. It's a program that focuses on direct sourcing, as I mentioned already, interest-free microcredits, and empowering women through business. I think the most important message that I want to send is that the program Kolo Nafaso is not charity at all. It's an alternative business model, and everybody at the table is a business person. So even if we are sitting under a mango tree holding a village meeting, a women group meeting, everybody that's there is a business person, and we're doing business together. That's important.
Okay. I wonder why it's important to focus on women in this way. Why was that decision taken?
It was not really a decision, but we are guided by culture and by heritage in this sense. Because shea is an activity, or collecting shea kernels and processing them is rooted in the culture of the shea belt. So it's the women that go out, and traditionally they would collect the kernels, process them into butter, and use it, for example, on their skin and also for cooking oil. And now it's much more an income-generating activity. So if we are being asked, for example, why don't we involve the men much more, It's because there's culturally a really clear divide between Shea Collection as being a women activity. So the men don't really want to be involved. It's always about the women. And for us, it fits really nicely because women empowerment, supporting women across agricultural commodities is a priority for us as a company because they often are the ones that are maybe experiencing disadvantages. So having this Shea supply chain that is built on strong business women is amazing. And ensuring that they have a secure outlet, direct sourcing, we're supporting them in the best way we can is really exciting, but it's also really rewarding for both, I think, for us, just as much as for the women.
But also for our customers, I would say, because many of our customers who are sourcing our Kolo Nafaso supply chain really value this way of doing the business and sourcing and having that impact in the regions that they can do storytelling about, but also report on their impact. And that it's directly related to a product that's actually in the products that they sell to consumers, right? It's not something they do on the side. It's embedded. And that business sense that Laura just talked about is, yeah, continuing. So from West Africa to global markets.
Exactly. Yeah. And often the Shea supply chain can be quite challenging to follow and to have transparency on. Because you have to imagine that we are dealing with millions of women that are collecting shea kernels across West Africa. And then they're going to their local markets and selling it somewhere. And then someone picks it up and collects it so that they have a bigger amount and then they sell it on. So if you're then asked as a business or by consumers to show transparency and traceability throughout your supply chain, that's nearly impossible. So by directly buying from the ones that are collecting it in the field, we are enabling full transparency and traceability, and we can ensure a segregated supply chain. So definitely there is also downstream, much downstream interest here.
And like you said, that makes it, that's very clear then, isn't it, for a consumer or a customer, exactly what they're doing and what impact they're having.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's quite large scale, right? So how many women do we have currently supplying to Kolo Nafaso today, Laura?
Yeah, it's 250,000 women that are currently contributing. Yeah.
So it's not small. It's not a pilot. It's not something we're doing with 10 women. It's really big.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's a proper alternative supply chain setup that is scaled up and really working.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. When listening to that, you might think, oh, this is going to a small group of women and yeah, this is a nice little project. But actually what you're saying, this is on scale. This is how you deal with Shea.
Exactly. And we have extension officers in the field, which are kind of the guys that go around with motorbikes visiting these communities on a really regular basis. And they are supposed to visit each community that they work with at least once a month. So it's a whole operation. It's not just a one-time engagement. And that's also how the program is built across the season, because Shea is really seasonal. So usually women are used to receiving an income once during the shea season, or in really small quantities when they bring some kernels to the market. In our case, we have established the program in such a way that they get pre-financed. That's the interest-free microcredits. They get that money at the beginning of the season, and that kind of breaks an income trap, because at the end of the dry season, all money is being used up. Often food is being used up. But it's also the period where women and men communities have to invest in the next agricultural season. So buy seeds, maybe hire a tractor. And that's at the same time the most expensive period of the year. So where they have least money, least resources they need to invest most. That's when the pre-financing is coming in. And that also kind of prevents women from selling their kernels too early in the season and then getting a bad price. So they can wait for a good price and get a good reward later on. So that's already kind of two interventions. And then later on, if the groups kind of meet the targets that we've set together, they also get a bonus for achieving the quantity targets. So that's how we are kind of smartly moving some things around. It's not rocket science at all, which have a big impact because it makes things plannable. That's a big change locally.
I mean, you say it's not rocket science, and it's not. Like you say, it's quite straightforward stuff, but it does take an element of thought to have gone into it in the first place.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we can talk a bit about that, because I think that reflects quite well on AAK having thought, well, let's think about this problem and how can we make it work as best as we can?
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't happen overnight either, right? The big important message here is that we come here as well as a co-development partner. So we have this idea, we sit at a table, we try to find a solution for the issues that are there. Okay, so if you're selling your kernels for a really low price and we're trying to optimize that, how can we move around with things then? Oh, would it work to have a microcredit then to pre-finance at a different timing? And then it doesn't work maybe for a few years until it's tested and people are kind of learning that it's working. The scale up also happens slowly, right? We don't start with 250,000 women. And we also keep adding to the program when we feel like, okay, we're not quite happy with this aspect, or we could really still have a bigger impact here. Then we're trialing things. But what is important to us is that it can be scaled again, because it's easy to strive for perfection and always try to find the best, most complicated addition to a program. But we think if we can scale it up to a large extent and then have a little bit of improvement, that's really good as well, and we reach more people. An example for that would be our rocket stoves.
Okay, tell us about those.
We fancily call them rocket stoves, but it's not much fancy about it. They are, again, it's not a gift or anything, it's a training. It's a training to use locally available materials to construct stoves to tackle one of the biggest issues that we have within post-harvest processing in shea, and that is smoke inhalation and burns, because you have to boil the kernels to stop germination. That's part of the process. Also, you use quite a bit of firewood for that. Firewood is not super readily available in the region. So it's tackling a few things, which is, again, from our perspective, quite smart. But these stoves, they are made out of termite soil, straw, and dung. So it's super simple, low-cost materials, but it's about the knowledge of being able to construct them in the right way so they don't break and they work efficiently. We've done around 50,000 trainings by now, since 2016. So again, we're not quite up to scale for the 250,000 women, but we are getting there with something that's simple, that they can take, make their own, and innovate further on. That's a little bit how Kolona Faso works.
Amazing. So Kolona Faso, how can people find out more?
On our website, there is plenty of information on our website. We even have some of our own podcasts interviewing our staff locally. And always reach out to your AAK contact person if you're curious to learn more.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. All right, well, let's turn to another one of your projects. So Impactful Rapeseed. So Alina, well, what is it, I guess, first of all, and what's it hoping to achieve?
So Impactful Rapeseed is our data-backed sustainability program in rapeseed, in which we are implementing regenerative agricultural practices in our Swedish rapeseed supply chain. As AAK, we have a long-standing relationship with the Swedish rapeseed farming, and we have been crushing rapeseed in our Swedish production site in Karlshamn. And rapeseed grows in an agricultural system, in a crop rotation with other crops. And when we optimize this system and with good farming practices, it gives the best outcomes for climate, biodiversity, yields, farmers, consumers, and communities, and creating true win-win situations. As I just said, the program is data-backed. And with this, we mean that farmers are reporting on their practices directly. And with the primary data that's collected from the farmers in the supply chain, we are able to provide customers with a better product carbon footprint. So that's related to climate targets based on actual emissions in the supply chain and directly related to their own products. And the primary data also allows for data-driven decision making and further development of the program. Based on that data, we can see what works well to improve the soil health and the yields and the emissions and what does not. I think that's also a little bit what the aim is, right? We're trying to improve the farming system, improve the soil health, reduce the emissions, increase the on-farm biodiversity, biodiversity related to the areas where we're harvesting and farming.
Great. Okay. Well, I mean, it sounds fantastic. And obviously those aims are great. It's going to need, I presume it takes a bit of buy-in from the farmers because they've got to record all this stuff. So it's, how receptive are they to the idea, or how receptive have they been to the idea?
Yeah. So the power of this program is really that it's built in collaboration. And farmer cooperatives have been highly involved in creating the program. We see that there's a great understanding of that we are jointly investing in the future resilience of rapeseed farming. So far, we've had great interest from farmers willing to participate. And in volumes, it seems that we are exceeding a bit of expectations right now on the upcoming harvest. But of course, we cannot guarantee what the weather will do in the last weeks before the harvest, but it's looking quite well. The farmers really care about their commitment to the planet as well. And they can see that by embracing climate action, they are safeguarding the soil and resources that future generations of farmers will depend on. For them, it's really about growing smarter today so the farmers, the planet, and the people can thrive tomorrow. What we really see is that within plant-based oil, so for us from AEK, the focus has primarily been on the tropical oils, such as palm. But in rapeseed and other soft oils, there are also great opportunities to make a positive impact. That's also with that focus we went to the farmers, started to discussing with them, what can we do, how can we work together, and how can we make better outcomes? And the activities that the farmers are doing in this program are, yeah, as I just said, how I call them, regenerative agricultural practices. And they are contextualized to the Swedish landscape. So we've looked at the practices, the activities, we've talked to the farmer cooperatives, and then we said, okay, so what makes sense for farming in Sweden? And that's the contextualization. And it really takes a holistic view on what the soil and the environment needs and implements then activities related to, for example, climate smart fertilizers. So those are fertilizers with a lower carbon footprint, but also precision farming for increased soil health and reduced emissions, and flower zones on the farm for pollinators, for on-farm species, and to create habitats, and also the hedgerows. That's also a way of having biodiversity on farms. And then soil coverage. So that's plants that you plant throughout the year in between harvesting periods and cycles to have a larger period of when the soil is covered with plants, and that also increases the soil health. And then the farmers who are participating in this program, they are receiving financial rewards for their efforts, as we understand that investing in these practices takes more time and requires investment from them as well. So that's also what's been giving an incentive to the farmers to join this program and making it worth their while. And why I refer to win-win situations, we have the proof for our customers, we have the impact for the climate and the biodiversity, we have the data-driven insights that can continue to develop this program to the aims that we're hoping to achieve. And we have the incentive for the farmers that they feel supported in the work that they are doing.
All bases covered by the sounds of it. Now, both these projects sound amazing. You mentioned palm oil there. And look, if we're talking about sustainability, we kind of need to talk about palm oil. It's a big part of the conversation. Laura, AAK is involved with palm oil. So how does that marry up then with the company's stated aim of driving sustainability in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, palm oil for us is absolutely part of the solution. There is no way around it. I think, first of all, we need to also be really aware how much demand there is for plant-based oils. And if we want to support, as a company, which AAK wants and does, the transition from fossil-based raw materials towards renewable raw materials, especially then oil crops, we cannot and should not step away from palm oil. Palm oil is the most efficient oil crop per hectare, up to 5 times more yield per hectare, for example, compared to soy. There's so much there, and it's also a really versatile crop. So you can use it for everything. You can use it for hard applications. You can use it for soft applications. Really versatile. That's also why we're using it currently, or the industry is using it in so many applications, right? But obviously, also looking at the demand that has continuously grown for PAML over the last 20 years or so, things were challenging, right, in the expansion of palm oil. But we believe growing palm oil in a sustainable way is possible and is necessary. So whenever there is discussions around if palm oil should be having a seat at the table or not, we definitely say yes. Also to avoid future negative impacts, right? Because palm oil has expanded so much already, there is still potential to increase the yield per hectare that we currently have. So using the land that is currently under palm oil production even more efficiently. And if we were to step away from palm, we would cause additional land use change, deforestation, conversion of natural ecosystems elsewhere. So it's basically just moving the problem and probably making it worse elsewhere. So that's a really important part. So let's make it work with what we have and make it better. And there's still work to be done within the industry, absolutely. But for us, it's a way to working with it. And making better happen, it's our purpose, but it also really makes sense for sustainability.
Yeah, palm oil's it's a strange one, isn't it? So as a consumer, palm oil's bad. That, you know, it's become the poster boy for you know, not being sustainable. And then the more I've certainly found this myself by making this podcast, the more I've learned about palm oil is palm oil's not bad. It's how we're sort of, how we're going about getting it. So how does AAK mitigate some of the downsides of palm oil production then?
Yeah, so we are one of the founding members of the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil. That's really the industry standard to ensure sustainable production. We are currently still having a seat at the board. We continue to make our voice heard. For example, we're currently involved in reviewing the supply chain standard. So continuous feedback, and we're channeling it back to the RSPO. Then AAK has an ambitious no deforestation target for our palm supply chain, also our soy supply chain, but let's focus on the palm supply chain. By the end of 2025, we are currently tracking at 91%, which is really quite strong within the industry. And we are getting there by focusing on traceability within the supply chain. So really engaging with our suppliers to get to the plantation level. And then we are checking and verifying our supply base with satellite information. We are also really consciously choosing suppliers based on their ability to partner with us and the willingness for them to improve. So it doesn't always have to be completely perfect when we start working with each other, but it's about this continuous improvement. And then, yeah, we are always engaging so that transformation can happen, because cherry picking is easy, right? But working towards change is more challenging. We are also working with a really transparent and open grievance mechanism, including a public grievance tracker. And whenever we are recording a deforestation grievance, we are quite strict on suspending a supplier at group level. So that it's really quite strict consequences when there is a case. We are also, because we are understanding that not every customer, not every region in the world is willing to pay a premium for RSPO certified. Obviously, that is our first recommendation for customers and for industries to work with sustainable palm oil, increase your RSPO uptake. If you cannot do that, there's other ways of working towards sustainable palm. There's, for example, multi-stakeholder industry initiatives like the Palm Oil Collaboration Group, where AAK is also quite active, and they're using a framework that is called NDPE-IRF, which is always so catchy within the industry. It stands for No Deforestation, No Peat, and No Exploitation Implementation Reporting Framework. So that's another angle that AAK supports.
A bit of a side question here, but I wonder where do you see the responsibility lying with this stuff? Because obviously AAK is taking quite an active role here, but then you're talking about the suppliers you work with. So, I mean, they should take some responsibility. Consumers obviously feel a bit of responsibility. Do you see it as it needs to be across the board?
Yes, absolutely. For me, it needs to be across the board. Every company needs to do their part, in my view. The RSPO, for example, is also actually working with a concept that is called shared responsibility, where every player of the value chain is expected to increase their uptake over time. And I think that is a good way, not only for increasing RSPO uptake, but for working towards the joint targets that we have. Because often we need to keep in mind that the companies upstream can be relatively simple. And also 40% of the palm oil is grown by smallholders. So really relatively small, individual, not organized farmers. So in order to bring all of these into the supply chain, we need to work together. As Alina mentioned very much in the beginning of the supply chain, we need to meet them where they are and then take steps, not to perfection, but to improvement.
So Alina, Laura mentioned that, you know, if I was to ask, is there a future for palm oil in a more sustainable world? You know, she says it definitely has a seat at the table. I wonder if you can expand on that point for us.
Yes, of course. So I think Laura has mentioned quite well that palm oil is the most efficient oil in terms of yield per hectare and a very versatile oil. But palm oil can also play a key role in the sustainable transition in replacing fossil, but also dairy and butter alternatives. And one of the biggest challenges that we have today in today's world is that we have a growing population with a growing demand for food, but not a growing planet. So if we want to reduce emissions from a global perspective, use less land to produce more food, and be less dependent on fossil, we are going to need palm oil. If palm oil is grown well, and that's done by RSPO certified plantations and smallholders, we can still increase the yield per hectare to meet global demand without deforestation. And to the listeners, if you want to hear more about how palm oil is supporting the sustainable transition, I would recommend to listen to our other podcast with Food Matters Live, where my colleagues will be talking about the impact we can make in the sustainable transition further.
Absolutely. One to look out for in the next couple of weeks. Okay. All right. Brilliant. Well, thank you. I'm glad we covered that topic because I think it's important, isn't it? If we're talking about oils and plant-based oils, we need to address it. Look, one final question from me, Alina. So AAK will be appearing at the Food Matters Live event in Rotterdam in September. It's our first event in mainland Europe, which is very exciting for us. You'll also be at our Ascot event in October. For those attending the Rotterdam event, what can they expect if they come along and see AAK?
Great question. So they can expect many exciting things for sure, such as innovative solutions to challenges. So product functionality related challenges, cost related challenges, sustainability related, of course, quality, stability, many challenges we are able to help with in their products. We will also have very tasty samples and prototypes of products to try. And we will be there with a group of experts from different industries we are delivering into, such as bakery, dairy, chocolate and confectionery, savory, infant and plant-based foods. These experts know a lot about how oils and fats perform in finished products, so I think it's definitely worth a chat. And last but not least, people can also stop by to learn and talk about our sustainability programs, as we hope to have inspired some today.
Lovely. Well, I'm sure you have. Alina Platter, Laura Schliebis, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
So we've been talking about the Food Matters Live event just then, where AAK will be. There are two to tell you about. So on the 23rd and 24th of September, we'll be in Rotterdam. And on the 8th and 9th of October, we'll be at the incredible Ascot Racecourse. If you visit foodmatterslive.com, you can register your interest in attending. They're not to be missed, so make sure you do register in plenty of time. I hope you enjoyed this episode made in partnership with AAK. Thank you so much for listening.